What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM with co-host Voss Larikos. Voss, how you doing?
Frankly, Ken, a little discouraged about the direction of this roster after the start of the new league year. How are you?
Yeah, same ways. I think we're going to get hit on each of these individually. Really appreciate the support we've had for this show, by the way. People have been very loyal listeners and whatnot. I'm sure a lot of what we say won't be a huge surprise, as you know, a lot of our thoughts about this. And definitely some positives and negatives. But I think, you know, at the higher level, I think fans really should have known this would be a very turbulent offseason. There's no amount of credit carding that the Ravens can do to keep this roster from getting weaker than it was in 2023.
No question. With that amount of unrestricted free agents, I believe that the total was 22 and a tight cap and a now adding the cornerstone contract of Matabike, which is aging pretty well so far, but still you're adding expense to your payroll and you have to cut somewhere else. It's just the way it works in a salary cap league.
It's amazing. We've hit the first week of free agency. There's a lot of high-level trends going on, and I think two of the big ones have been guards getting paid. Okay, that's been one of the big ones. And the other one is running backs really getting paid this year. They don't need their Zoom call this year. Guards certainly don't need one this year in terms of trying to understand why they're not getting paid. It's interesting because if you're looking for a place where the Ravens could be zigging as opposed to zagging, it might be at guard, where they might go with some younger players now and really save relative to some other teams.
Absolutely. What was it? Robert Hunt received a $100 million contract, and he has not been – he's an average player. Maybe he has some upside, but that was one of the bigger surprises. Running backs as well, they moved fast. I think we were expecting that they would hang around the market a little bit longer, but pretty much everyone got swooped up in the first few days. Not long contracts necessarily, not blockbuster contracts, but and I think they're probably still negative as far as growth of the running backs compared to growth of the cap. But there is some money out there that maybe we didn't expect.
Right. Saquon Barkley in particular really got paid, and that was an interesting one. I didn't like the move, would very happy the Ravens weren't involved in it. And then the Ravens go out and sign Derrick Henry to a fairly big money deal for a running back, not at the very top end of the market, but certainly a big money deal. I guess we'll start there. And there's so much to talk about. All these moves are big for the Ravens, but we'll start with the Derrick Henry deal. 2 years, $16 million. Incentives that could push that to 20. I still have not seen what the incentives are for.
No.
Or what the 1 year out cost is. Have you seen that yet? Is it $9 million for 1 year if there could be out?
It's $9 million guaranteed. I'm not sure if that might hit, some of that might hit next year in 25, but that money has to come from somewhere, somehow, some way eventually. So there is an opportunity cost, and it's not a direct, well, you know, somebody was traded or somebody was cut to afford this. It's not direct, but it all is eventually an indirect connection in the league. So there is a cost to it.
Yeah. And you know, certainly it's the big question is, where are you not going to spend in this league? Running back had always been a good answer for the Baltimore Ravens. They did not stick with that this year, really, since the Ray Rice contract. And that's been a decade. You know, they hadn't paid any running back any significant dollars. Yes. Little bit above the minimum for players like Gus, who had been exceptionally good, but nothing, you know, significantly above that.
Yeah, they gave Forsett a mid-level deal after his first year, and then he ended up breaking his arm and didn't quite pan out. You know, there's two ways to look at the Ravens' rushing proficiency. They have a built-in efficiency with Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. They finished number one in rushing in three of the last 5 years. The other 2 years they didn't. They finished second, and they finished third. And you can just look back to that 2018 season, and they had, believe, the 30 or 31st best rushing offense before the bye. And then after the bye, they had the record-setting rushing offense. And they had the same backs. It was Alex Collins and Gus Edwards, and they did make the change at right tackle. But so the one line of thought is, well, we have a really good rushing team, so running back helps us more than other teams. The other line of thought is they have a really good rushing offense regardless, so running back is the obvious place to save. I lean towards the second. You can make a case for the first, but I lean towards the second.
I do too, but I think this is a case where we want to lay out the pros and cons as much as we can, and not just conclude. And I'm not saying you're doing that, Voss. I want to lay out the pros from Henry as well as the cons of the deal. When I compare Gus to Henry, I don't see enough difference to warrant the move. That would be, you know, jump into a conclusion ahead. But when I go to Henry, let's look at the positives first. He has a track record of higher volume than Gus. Gus has been all, you know, very consistent, you know, 160, 180 carry a year guy. But Henry is, you know, top 300 carries before. And you do get more volume. So if you get the same level of above the league average play, which Henry has not been able to generate, by the way, relative to Gus. But if he can get the same level of above the average level of league play in his new situation with the Ravens, then you get more value out of it with Henry.
Agreed. You know, three times, he essentially costs three times as much as Gus, you know, roughly. You know, there are some positives, certainly. You know, you want to pay a contract based on what the player is going to do in future years and not what they've done in the past. And maybe there were some signs that Gus was regressing a bit. On the other hand, Henry's 30 years old with over 2,000 carries on his body tread wear. He has been the one outlier who has been able to avoid the running backs falling off a cliff. But his metrics are declining. Last year, I believe it was 3.3 rushing yards over expectation for Derrick Henry. So that's
the entire year. That's the aggregate number.
Aggregate number, and that stat is supposed to take into account the offensive line, and obviously he wasn't playing but in a good blocking unit. So that's compared to Keaton Mitchell, 4.3. So Mitchell is a full 4 yards better in rushing yards over expected. The one really strong point of Henry's game that has remained, 2.2 yards after contact per carry was the highest mark in the league next year. So you got some metrics pointing down, and you have some others maybe pointing up still.
He's led the league in carries in 4 of the last 5 years. The thing I look at is success rate. Now, we want to lay out what that means again. Success rate is the percentage of times that you keep your team on target in terms of down and distance. It highly favors power backs like Henry, who convert first downs on third and one in particular. And anyone who can get 40% of the yards on first down, 60% of the yards on second down, or 100% of the yards on third or fourth down gets a one for that play. Otherwise, you get a zero for that play if you didn't do it. And then the success percentage is what percentage of your carries actually met those standards based on down and distance. Well, Henry has not been very good the last 3 years. He's averaged right around 46%. He's at 49.3% for his career. So early in his career, and in 2020, he had his high of 56.6% when he rushed for over 2,000 yards. By comparison, Gus Edwards' career success rate is 57.4%. Okay, that's 11 points higher than Henry's been the last 3 years. It's 1 point higher than Henry was ever at the top of his game. And yes, he's played with Jackson. He may or may not have played with a better offensive line that entire time. The Tennessee offensive line was pretty damn good, particularly in Henry's great years. I look at success rate and I say, you know, Henry has some additional breakaway potential maybe that Gus doesn't have. But both of them in great yards after contact players in their careers. And there's different ways to measure that, by the way. You'll see that differently represented on various sites, but they've both been very good in their careers at what they do after contact.
Yes, for sure. And Henry, I believe they clocked him at over 20 miles an hour in week 18 of the last season. So his speed is apparently, you know, staying with him as he ages. The issue is, I think one of the issues is he sort of needs a runway to get going. He just has that kind of high cut, top heavy style. So he can get tripped up in the backfield. Once he kind of gains positive momentum, that's when he can, you know, break away. The Ravens had the fifth best, I believe, run blocking O-line last year. It remains to be seen how it looks next year. Here's another interesting thought. 66% of Derrick Henry's carries last season were under center. The Ravens ran 84% of their plays out of the gun. So there is some schematic questions there.
That is a really good point there about is he really a schematic fit? And the Ravens, I'll tell you what else, they may move back to pistol with Henry if they do stay in the shotgun. They may stay under center, but they may move back to pistol because it just makes more sense to have Lamar be the outside threat and Henry the inside threat as this. If they go to sidecar, I think it really minimizes what Henry brings you. Good. It was good for Gus. It's fantastic for Hill or Mitchell. It exactly fits their needs. But you know, you want a running back, a power running back, to be directly behind Jackson. And Mark Ingram had a big year out of pistol in 2019, of course. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Ravens made a schematic change of that sort.
I agree. That would be a smart way to go at this point. I definitely think that's smart. One of the questions I've been wondering about, is it advantageous to have a bell cow running back? Because the Ravens have deployed running back by committee for a long time now. And that's sort of a lot of folks are excited that Lamar's not going to lead the team in carries, et cetera. But I think there's some injury risk there when you consolidate your assets into one big name player instead of multiples.
That's true at any position, and I would completely agree with that statement, Voss. The more you put into that, the more you inherently have injury risk. I've always said it's a problem at weak side linebacker paying that guy. Mm-hmm. It's the ultimate position for ease of switching in specialists. You get a guy who's a two down run stopper. You might even get a guy who's a second down pass rusher, and then you have a guy who's a third down dime. And you get exactly what you want on a per down basis. It costs a fraction as much as getting a three down unicorn to play the position. I'm very much in favor of that. And I think the Ravens have proven with all the success they've had in the Jackson years that they don't need to spend that money. To your earlier point about Henry, is do you really get the incremental marginal value out of a player like Henry when you already have a threat like Jackson lifting all boats? I think it's really good too. It's just, I think I don't see how you can gain all that in the same situation. I mean, they'll be great together. I think they'll both complement each other in some very positive ways, but I'm just not sure you get all of the incremental value on the margin. I think you're better having Jackson lift a slightly above average set of running backs, which the Ravens have easily found them cheap. to work with a pretty good offensive line and be good. And the Ravens, you know, one of the problems with the Henry signing is it will directly impact or indirectly impact, depending on how you want to call this, the quality of the offensive line this year. You know, if you sign him, you probably don't sign Kevin Zeitler.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to say they could have kept Gus for $3 million or Henry for $9 million, that's a $6 million difference that would have went towards somewhere, some way, some position eventually. I definitely agree with you as far as the specializing in a way where you have a committee. Now, on the offensive side of the ball, that can tip off the defense to maybe you're leaning a little bit more a certain way. So I can understand that there is some advantage to that. But the injury risk is real. What other points schematically? I read a lot that, you know, defenses are going to play the Ravens differently now that they have Derrick Henry in the backfield. This is per PFF. Derrick Henry faced the heaviest boxes, 8-plus man in the league last year. Gus Edwards was sixth most. So you have a little bit of upward mobility there as far as you're bringing the defense in a little bit more. Let me wrap this one up real quick. I'm just not sure that that's beneficial. You know, I thought the reason to bring in Todd Monken was to spread the defense out, make them defend every blade of grass, put the playmakers out in space. And, you know, so that's questionable to me whether that's actually a benefit or a detriment.
I completely agree. And honestly, the heavy boxes isn't just a function of Henry. It's a function of the use of a fullback, the use of multiple tight ends. That's what gets you into heavy boxes, you know, just as often. Henry probably has some small effect on that beyond that. But the Ravens, with their heaviest offense ever in 2022, faced an incredible amount of heavy boxes because of it. And it's part of a fact of life. When you put a fullback on the field, Your offense changes to point of attack instead of trying to spread the other team. And a lot of teams, they have the personnel and they're better off running out of 11. And you're depending on your running back to beat people and to break tackles and not have the advantages of blocking. With the point of attack offense, you're going to outnumber your opponent at some point along that line of scrimmage and try and break through what will be a very significant, you know, Maginot line of defense that they have set up there. So it is what it is. And I think the whole heavy boxes thing gets a little overstated in terms of what it really is and what it really means to the offense.
Right. One other point I'd like to make on Henry and just how it kind of impacts some of the issues the Ravens have had in the postseason. A lot of folks say it's a too high league now, so running's coming back and stopping the run's coming back. Not necessarily for the Ravens. In the conference championship game, Lamar attempted 15 passes against single high and only completed 5. I think we've seen a pattern in the 4 playoff losses. You know, the Chargers went to quarter and stacked the box. The Titans did that inverted cover 2 with Dean Pease and just brought the action to the line of scrimmage. Same thing with Buffalo. I think that was a hot 40% blitz in the Buffalo game. And the same thing with the Kansas City
game, yeah.
Blitz, that was the highest blitz rate Spagnuolo has called since he's been there. And they flooded the intermediate zones and basically dared Lamar to go deep. So I think Henry can have a beneficial effect on the offense, but they still need to maintain or improve their deep balls, their deep ball consistency and pass protection. So I think you maybe upgraded somewhere you didn't necessarily need to, and you're maybe taking on water in places where you probably needed to upgrade.
You know, one of the interesting things about Henry, and this speaks to him playing out of sidecar would still be a valuable use of him, is that he is one of the best pass blockers in the NFL among running backs. And that is definitely a weakness of Gus Edwards. So Gus Edwards was a worse pass blocker than Justice Hill, who, you know, he outweighs very significantly. that's a big weakness of Gus. And Henry will be able to slow down the single blitzes. He's not a tonic for multiple blitzes. If the other team goes cover 0, Derrick Henry doesn't save your bacon from, you know, right, 6 or 7 guys rushing the quarterback. So you still need to to have a way to get him free. Another thing, you know, we're really losing with Gus is the receiving had been so good. And Edwards, not a high volume receiver for his career. And Henry's been pretty good as a receiver in his career. The other guys, Kamara and other people, they're done as receivers. Again, a high volume receivers at really low impact. But Gus Edwards leaves Baltimore as the all-time leader in yards per target for the Baltimore Ravens. Now, he's only had 37 targets, and I extended it all the way down to 20. So there hasn't been anybody even in really limited targets that's been nearly as good. But 10.1 yards per target for his career, and we saw a lot this last year that I think was very positive in terms of his ability to find space on extended plays.
Agreed. He had that one explosive catch as well. I think Henry's done most of his damage in receiving game on screens, and he's one of the better running backs as far as screen game, and it kind of makes sense when you see his running style that you get him out in space and he can bulldoze corners and safeties. But that hasn't been a big part of the game plan for Lamar. I think Lamar has kind of, I guess, made the calculation in his mind, I'm probably better off scrambling here than taking the dump off or taking the screenplay. So we'll see how that is incorporated into the offense. The money and the opportunity cost is one thing. I just hope it's not a harbinger of going backwards to a more, just tight formation, smash mouth style, because to be honest, the smash mouth style just doesn't really win in the playoffs anymore. The last champion was the 13 Seahawks that kind of were run first. You never want to take that away, but you want to maintain the balance. So quick numbers is for Derrick Henry. In 2020, his regular season yards per carry was 5.4. In the postseason, it was 2.2. In 21, it was 4.3. In the postseason, it was 3.1. Gus, regular season over his career, 4.9. Postseason 4.1, his success rate also dropped 4% in the postseason. At the end of the day, NFL athletes are so big and strong that hyper-specific game plans designed to stop smash-mouth rushing attacks have been very effective in the playoffs recently.
Yeah, I mean, it basically just takes blitzing, and you have to be fortunate. You have to be able to do it, and the Ravens certainly were able to beat the Texans pretty soundly in terms of what they did, and a lot of that was on the ground. But then they could not stand up to Spagnuolo's blitz, and that was a very frustrating day of football. It's one of the games we're going to remember for a long time. And there has been a pattern to that in the big losses in 2019 and in 2006 in terms of giving up on the running game at a certain point or not being as successful as you need to be. The 2006 game and the 2023 game, very similar in terms of smaller defenses using numbers to offset their size deficiencies and beating the Ravens that way. That was also, by the way, true, I think, in the 2018 game. They won the game up front with their front four, but they had a bunch of smaller guys, at safeties playing linebacker that day.
Everybody was hurt. KC played this last game without Nadi, their best nose tackle. I mean, I don't know. Just even the Ravens, going into last postseason, everyone was saying, well, run defense is a little leaky. It might be a little shoddy. And all of a sudden, they strap them on and just shut them down. It just seems like defenses can hit that switch when they need to.
Well, it certainly worked. And I think, you know, part of the reason of acquiring Henry is the idea that you're not going to be able to blitz Lamar with five as easily anymore. It's usually when the odd man comes, that running back, unless he's a primary target, has a sort of an option that he does. He either has to pick up a block or he can leave. And normally when he's assigned with a pattern, that's when he's more likely to have a chip block. So you'll see him intentionally do that. By the way, Derrick Henry should be great for some chip blocks this year. He's a very large man, and helping out a tackle like Faalele or Sammy, for that matter, will be really good. But the only time where it really helps you to have a very good running back pass blocker is when the other team blitzes with five exactly. And that does happen. Right. It's a high percentage of plays, but it's still, you don't always have them assigned to do that. And it's actually a relatively small payoff in total in terms of the total pass blocking snaps.
Yes, sir. Just ultimately, a little bit of a perplexing decision. We thought this was the place to save more than any other place, potentially getting a marginal upgrade at the expense of decline elsewhere. So hopefully, you know, they could take the league by storm, and Roman and Henry can, you know, figure out a way to smash everybody in the mouth all the way to the Super Bowl. But I think they still do need probably a little bit. They still need to make some moves on offense. I'm not sure this really solved very much.
Right. I think you mean Monken and Henry, right?
Yes.
As Roman and Edwards Roman? Figure it out. Yeah, no, that would be bad.
Freudian slip.
Yeah, there you go. But anyway, I feel the same way. I think if they get volume out of Henry, and he has volume at a success rate of over 50%, I think we're going to be basically happy with it. He still has some breakaway ability that is there. He can do some things as a receiver in a higher volume than Gus did. The problem will come if he suddenly cannot handle the volume anymore, or the Ravens decide to cut his volume to say 50% more than what Edwards had last year, then I think you really have to question the value again. And I personally believe at age 30, the Ravens are going to be looking to, as they did with Calais Campbell, find a way to get more value per carry out of him with a lower carry volume. So I think that certainly if Mitchell's ready to play, I mean, Mitchell is not going to be denied snaps versus Derrick Henry even. I mean, if you really believe Derrick Henry is a better back than Mitchell right now, I got some swampland to sell you, because that just ain't the case. And admittedly, Mitchell's coming back from an injury. We're not going to know exactly who he is anymore. But, Mitchell had the most productive season ever by a running back in 40 carries or more. He will not be denied this year. I also think Justice Hill is still going to play a fair amount. Definitely brings a change of pace that's very nice.
Yeah, so it's a good, they needed running backs. We didn't think they needed an expensive one. They chose that route, but I guess that's one less draft need. Hopefully there isn't a running back sitting there at BPA that they can't pass on. Seems to be unlucky like that sometimes, where you kind of with the Trenton Simpson, you trade the second for Roquan, and then you get stuck with the BPA linebacker you can't use your first year. But we'll see. Tennessee – They were scaling him back a little bit last year, and they had Tajay Spears taking on some of his workload. I remember the first quarter of the year, some of the national pundits were like, what's going on here? And then Tennessee turns around and gives Tony Pollard a 3-year, $24 million deal instead of Derrick Henry, who's probably a Ring of Honor guy for them. So we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. We've got a lot to talk about today. So the next thing is the long-term deal for Justin Madubuike. Obviously a huge deal. Cornerstone player. I think, tell me what comes to mind first in terms of this Madubuike deal, because there's a lot of positives I see from it.
I think they locked up a rare skill set, kind of the opposite of the running back. Is there's not a whole lot of consistently penetrating, disruptive three techs in the league or coming out every year. So on its face, that's the first way to kind of evaluate it. So from that perspective, you pay the rare skill set.
That's something that Zach Orr will be able to lean on, I think. And it's I won't say it's an easy thing to lean on, but it's something you can build your pass rush around, is figuring out how to get one-on-one matchups for Madubuike. And Madubuike's got to continue to convert those at a high level. And he also needs to be the kind of cleanup player he's been, because his overall pressure rate is good, but not great. And what you really get value from is the fact that other people are getting first pressures, and he's one of the truly great pursuit players in the NFL. That he'll run down a quarterback like almost nobody else, and he'll be in the backfield in position to do so a lot of times. So I'm very excited about it, and in seeing the defensive tackle contracts that came after him, very happy the Ravens signed him first.
Yes. I think apparently that was the plan. They wanted to get it done before Christian Wilkins broke the bank as a UFA, and they did. And the Ravens have used this contract structure again now that they've used a few times, including Ronnie Stanley.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Mark Andrews, where they had higher cash flows in year 2 and 3 than, you know, league average or industry standard. But in exchange for that, they get a little bit lower AAV or APY than maybe the player was projected to get.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then there's still some restructurable money there, of course, if they have a reasonable salary, even with guarantees in year two. So there's still some opportunity to do that, at least with, yes. Space was created quickly, which I think was one of the really important things. The Ravens tagged Matabike was what, about 2 or 3 days later that they had him sign. Mm-hmm. So very happy with the Ravens organization at moving through this quickly. It was going to be one of the big obstacles to other signings making this move here. By the way, if you're looking for that small additional cost of the Henry deal, it would be the compensatory draft pick the Ravens may give up. Now, it might not be much because the Ravens have a whole lot of compensatory picks they earned, but unfortunately, they're going to give away one of their better ones to get Henry. So it's a little bit of a trade down of draft value.
OTC projects that the Henry signing will cancel out the Geno Smith comp pick, which was their second highest, but still an early sixth, not a fifth or anything. Yeah.
Well, that's good because if it had impacted the Queen signing or the it's Geno Stone, I think you mean. But anyway, the
did I say Smith? Always.
Yeah, that's okay. We're in that mode. I should just let it be. I think everybody understood what you were talking about. Any negative on the Matabike deal that you would point to? Because I want to be as balanced as possible about this. We're all very bullish on Matabike, but anything?
I mean, the only negative is, potentially, are they getting too star laden and too hot top heavy? You know, because at some point you reach a point where you have so many cornerstone contracts that the middle tier, the middle class of your roster, you can't afford. That would be the one concern. But I think they probably have some flexibility with Stanley and Andrews and Humphrey, you know, in the next couple of years to maybe trim that back down to more of a sixth cornerstone players instead of 7 or 8.
They'll have a couple more cornerstones that almost certainly will sign. They'll have to make a decision on what they want to do with Odafe Oweh, and a lot of that's going to be based on what he does, I think, in year 4. because he has the fifth year option already, but it could be that they sign him long term. Then also coming after next year will be a decision on Linderbaum, because he won't have a reasonable fifth year option to pick up, because being a center, he should make less than other linemen who he's grouped in with. Then they have an extra year on Hamilton, because they'll no doubt be willing to franchise him, or fit well. They'll not only will they be willing to fifth year option him, which they'll certainly will do, but they'll also be willing to franchise him for a safety number. But he's going to have to get paid at some point. And I cannot foresee a Ravens future that does not have Kyle Hamilton making the Ring of Honor. I can't do it. And if I could do it, I wouldn't want to.
best player on the defense last year. The splits will back that up. The first year, they said, look at the Roquan splits. But last year, Hamilton had the splits for sure.
Yeah. All right, so move on from Matt.
And you got a couple more. Well, you have a couple more. You have to make a decision on Bateman. And you also have, who was the other one? Just slipped my mind. Brandon Stevens as well. So it's going to be tough to keep all the young core together.
So Brandon Stevens, probably a mid-range contract and not really a cornerstone contract is what I'm thinking, but he could be signed this offseason. I think that'd be a very good use of money to lock that up right now, because they are not very young at cornerback, and he's one of the few guys who really meets the standard. Bateman, I think, probably is not going to get the fifth-year option. I think they have a little bit of time to decide on that, right?
I think it's 2 weeks after the draft.
Okay. So that's still a ways away, but I don't expect him to be doing it. I think it's 100% chance that they give it to Owe.
Agreed.
We're close. Yeah. Well, let's talk about the next thing. This is big news that came out yesterday. We're having this discussion on Thursday, although this show is out on Friday, of course, but the Morgan Moses trade, another kind of a head scratcher from my position. Now, I always have to caveat this with Gus as well, as saying the Ravens understand more about the physical condition of Morgan Moses and Gus Edwards than I do. So there may be other reasons why they did it. But Morgan Moses traded back to the Jets for a exchange of fourth round picks plus a sixth round pick. And if you look at the JJ value in total, it's about a top of the fifth round pick, about 144 or 145. That's what you got.
I had 140, 70 for the 112, 5 for the 218, minus 39 for the 134 is 36. So pick 140.
Okay. I have 68 for 113. Did you have 112? Because I think 113 is the pick the Ravens are getting.
Okay. And maybe that's it. I have 112.
38.5 loss for 135 and 4.2 gain for 218. Total of 33.7, which puts it right between 144 and 145. But either way, you know, the margin, the pick is where it is. It would be a few slots higher, and I'm talking not much, 6-7 slots higher, if you believe in a flatter valuation scheme, which says there's less of a difference between a fourth round pick and a sixth round pick, essentially. But it's not a lot of value coming back. And you know, I want to talk about his effectiveness in general, but it clears $5.5 million of cap. The deal that this reminds me of is the Anquan Boldin trade to San Francisco after the 2012 season.
Yeah, that's a good callback there. I think Boldin had 6 of his 8 million guaranteed, and they only saved 2 million for Boldin. But anyway, Seth Walter out of ESPN gave the Ravens a C+ for the trade. Thought that the Ravens probably should have been able to extract a little bit more value for Morgan Moses. Next Gen Stats had Morgan Moses with the 20th best pass block win rate last season, which is a good mark, obviously. And I thought he fared well as a run blocker, as a zone blocker out in space. And some folks seem to think that that's the impetus for this. They want to get more athletic and young. I'm not sure Falele is more athletic than Moses is
for a
zone blocker or out in space. So I'm not really sure where that's coming from.
I'll give you my grading of these guys, because I think there's a fair amount to talk about here. So as I graded in 2024, Moses had a 0.77 aggregate raw score. Now, to put that in terms, that's before adjustment. So then there'd be an adjustment that would put him up in the B range. Because he's an above average player on a per game basis, you aggregate that even higher. If you think about how PFF score, if you got a 70 every game, you'd probably be like an 78 or an 82 or something for the season. And it surprises people, but it's an aggregation of positive results is the way to think of that. Compared to the other tackles the Ravens had, McCary was at 0.70 on an aggregate basis. That's almost exactly the middle of the C range. Nothing wrong with that as a backup. It's pretty good. But it's you wouldn't replace McCary with Moses if you had the choice. Falele at 0.62. So that's the likely replacement. What I will say about Falele is he was 66 of 92 in his last four regular season games. That's a solid C after adjustment. I think that has to be what they're looking at. It's night and day. It's like Lamar Jackson coming to the Ravens and what he does for your run game in terms of where Falele was before, an aggregate something like 41 F versus what he was those last four games of the regular season where he played pretty well. So I guess that's what they're looking at and saying he's going to be our guy. I really don't believe it should be McCary. I think you need him too much as a left tackle backup to have him on the field at right tackle and take risk.
Yeah, I'd be very surprised if you got 17 plus games out of Ronnie Stanley next season. I think you do need McCary. He's essentially, it's a swing man, but really he's just the left tackle backup. You know, that's really his best role. You know, I can understand the impetus to want to get younger and get cheaper at offensive tackle. Morgan Moses getting a little bit older, struggled with some injuries last year. It's just hard to take that approach at tackle and then do the opposite and get older and more expensive at running back at the same time and say that that's something. You know, there's just not as many tackles. It's a good tackle class. Maybe they kind of figure one of the right tackles is going to get to them at 30, and that's why to make this move. $5.5 million is also a lot of cap space, but I thought he would have been well worth that contract next year personally.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredibly cheap at right tackle for a quality player. And Moses is one of the better right tackles in the league right now. He's not top five probably, but he's in the top among right tackles. I'd say he's in the top 10 to 12 in the league. Been very consistently good. And, you know, it's remarkable. Look at his game as literally last year. His worst game was in week 15, was a D minus. I'll just tell you, there's a lot of week-to-week variation, and a tackle, particularly where your pass-blocking events, particularly versus very good pass rushers, can vary a lot. It's unusual to not have an F, and mm-hmm. he was exceptionally good there. On the interior, much more likely, Yanda had years where he just got a bunch of consecutive Bs and As and whatnot. And Zeitler had a great run this year, but a tackle, very difficult, and unfortunately, fortunately, Moses really didn't have any drop off the table games this year. He only had 30 yards in penalties this year, which is pretty damn good. That's like 6-5 yard penalties. Think of it that way. Stanley, by comparison, had 90 yards in penalties, mm-hmm. and that's a major difference between those two. If you're looking at total pressures, now remember, I do it differently than PFF, and you wouldn't mind, look up PFF's pressure numbers for me while we're here. But sure. I had Moses for 10 and one-third pressures, 4 quarterback hits, and 6.08 sacks. Now, the 6.08, don't get caught up in that. That's 6 1/12 is what that means. So when you get a combination of a quarter and a third kind of thing, you end up with a 12th. So don't get frustrated by that. But basically, I give out the partials. And so it can differ sometimes from what PFF does. Usually, I'm a little higher in terms of handing out those pressures. Do you have it in front of you?
Sorry, just still pulling it up.
Sure, no problem.
So he was the second best lineman or third best last year?
He was really, I think he was probably number three, but was really close. Linderbaum, Zeitler, and Moses all were very close in terms of their amount above the average of their position. Linderbaum had a 0.84 aggregate score, but he's a center, so the aggregate scores are higher. Zeitler's at 0.81, and that's just about the same level relative. Guard versus center should be about a 3-point difference. And then Moses at 0.77 is a 4-point difference, and maybe another 3 would be reasonable. So if I had to say, I'd say Linderbaum and Zeitler both had maybe B-plus seasons for the whole year, and mm-hmm. Moses had a B season for the whole year. And he was right on the border of B, B-plus, but that's where I'd put them. Yeah, third best lineman.
So PFF has Moses with 24 pressures allowed, 5 sacks allowed, and the 6 penalties.
And how many quarterback hits? Okay, that 24 pressures got to be a total number. That's not hurries or something. I'm looking for hurries. So the I've only got 10 and a third pressure. So they probably have something like 14 for hurries.
19 hurries.
Okay. Any quarterback hits that were not sacks? That's how they do it.
Says none. So I guess not.
That's remarkable. So I have them for four there. And one thing that I do is if the player is the one who moves the quarterback off the spot and that causes him to get hit, then he gets a quarterback hit and not a sack. I know that for the rule at PFF is that if he moves him off the spot and somebody else gets the quarterback hit that's not his guy, then they charge him only with a hurry on the play.
Okay.
So it's a slight grading difference. It's PFF and I, believe me, we're watching the same football game. We're seeing right. The same results here. We have slightly different definitions of how we do things. And we have big differences in terms of weightings, in terms of particularly for penalties. PFF's is very, very easy on penalties. And I'm very hard on them.
Right. Right. I mean, regardless, you know, he was a quality player last year for a reasonable number and they got a fourth round or early fifth round back for him.
So kind of a bummer. And again, I make it similar to that trade for Bolden. Let's move on. Mm-hmm. Talk about Bowser, OBJ, their releases in the last 36 hours or so. Bowser, we saw this one coming.
Yeah. Yeah. Missed the entire season on the NFI list with a mysterious injury. Only played 9 games in 2022 after Achilles injury. You know, it was a bargain contract that just got derailed by injuries and saves $5.5 million.
And they saved, of course, the money this last year by NFIing him the whole year. They didn't pay him. So they didn't end up paying Bowser too much money. I think it was $12 million for 3 years. And he, you know, provided certainly very good value for that. If we look back at who Tyus Bowser was, his career is a damn shame with the injury history he has. It's like Lardarius Webb in some ways, or I'm trying to think of another career. Hopefully Keaton Mitchell doesn't end up this way, but Lardarius Webb is a big one. Well, you have a really fine career derailed by injuries, and Bowser had become that extremely good Sam linebacker, a guy who could drop to cover a high percentage of snaps. It was like 30% in his career and still deliver about a 1.7% sack rate, which was higher, for example, than Jadeveon Clowney has been in his career. Mm-hmm. It's very frustrating that a good player like that shows up at camp and has this knee injury and you lose an entire freaking season from it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one of the pound for pound best athletes on the team when he was healthy. A lot of good aspects to his game. There's hybrid of all hybrids there. Maybe we'll do a recollections on him in 2035 or so.
Yeah, maybe even now, although it might be just a little bit too painful. It's unfortunate. I love the guy as far as a coverage linebacker. There wasn't a better coverage outside linebacker in the entire league when he was at the peak of his game and really drove the flexibility of Martindale's pass rush because those were really his good years. He didn't really play much for McDonald, honestly, just a few games in 22. But sad to lose.
He had the clutch gene too. I think the majority of his interceptions came in either rivalry games or late in the fourth quarter. So a little clutch factor there.
Well, let's move on and talk about the OBJ release. Another one that I think there was some finger crossing going on. I said about bringing OBJ back. I don't think it was ever really a serious consideration, particularly given the way they restructured the contract. So specifically for a post June 1 cut.
Yeah, I wonder how they come to that term of 50 million. How do they come to that number? You know, I mean, obviously it's a placeholder number, but I wonder who proposed that, the Ravens or the agent or who. So with the restructure, his dead cap hit in 2024 is going to be 2.8 million. And then in 2025, 8.3 million. They pushed that off. They kicked that can a little bit. Jonas Schaefer put out an article today. Or maybe last night for Baltimore Banner, according to Next Gen Stats, Odell Beckham Jr. was the 24th best overall wide receiver in the NFL last season. And that I guess is some sort of combination of open percentage or separation percentage, yards after the catch, and contested catches. I personally don't think he was worth $15 million. I don't think he was probably worth half of that, but it is, in my view, a hole that needs to be addressed with a top 100 pick in the draft.
Okay, so maybe a third-round pick, you're saying, goes to a wide receiver here. When you say top 100, you want to be clear about that you unless it's a significant BPA situation, you don't want the first-round pick spent on a wide receiver this year.
I am open to that. I am open to that possibility if the right player is there. I think, there's a lot of surplus value if you hit on a receiver. Bateman's future is uncertain. You need four receivers. Last year, Beckham was the fourth most snaps at wide receiver, and he still played over 500 snaps. And he ended up with an approximate value of 6, which was better than both Aguilar and Bateman, who each are 4, were Pro Football Reference's metric. Even if you have 2 good tight ends, I think you still need 4 good receivers, in my view.
Yeah, I'm with you. And then your 5th guy is a special teams guy. I just think what I think you need in terms of a good receiver, I probably would put a little lower standard. And in fact, one thing that I like about OBJ being gone is it's going to force the action to Bateman more this year, mm-hmm. which I think is going to be good. I think we're going to find out Bateman's a better player than we have realized to date. And that'll be good. And of course, they'll force lots of balls to Flowers. That's that's in their DNA now. I just regarding the 24th best receiver in the game, there are some really nice things that Odell did for the Ravens. He drew some penalties. He had an eight and change yards per target, which is way up from where he'd been in recent years. It's just that's a really nice thing. Much more vertically dangerous than anybody I think expected it to be, certainly me. So on a per play basis, I liked what OBJ did, but OBJ didn't play a lot of snaps. He wasn't really important to the offense in general for the Baltimore Ravens. I certainly wasn't worth all that money. And if you were one of the proponents of OBJ last year, and I want you to basically separate the, we needed to sign him to get Lamar Jackson stuff, because going forward, Lamar Jackson, has the money. He can't dictate who the Ravens otherwise sign. That should have been true initially as well, but they went out and they signed OBJ. Some of it maybe to make him happy. I want to know how much of that was make Lamar Jackson happy money, because I think OBJ's value was about $5 million this last year. $5-6 million.
I think that's right in the right ballpark. I agree. You shouldn't be making decisions off of making a player happy. I don't know what else really more to say. He had a beneficial impact, but not probably for about a half of what he signed for. And they're going to pay that off over the long term now. So it is what it is. Hopefully Bateman takes the step and, you have 2 top 2, and then you have Aguilar as your primary slot guy. And then you need one more perimeter guy for negative game scripts, injury insurance. Eric DaCosta mentioned that receivers break down like race cars at the combine, and I agree with that. So not a huge loss, but I think you need to invest a pretty early capital. And not personally, I don't want a slot only guy. I think you need a predominantly perimeter guy.
See, you'd prefer to have a bigger guy, and I think that fits the stylistic needs of the Ravens. I think that if they have another guy who can be at least a backup X, but a big receiver, that is a good thing. I think it's the better choice. They have a team that has all slot ponies in their wide receiver room. And there have been teams who have been successful doing the Smurfs. If you go way back, we're that sort of a offense for the Redskins in the 90s, 80s and 90s, I guess. But if you're really talking about like what fits a team's usage requirements, it's usually a mix of body types that gets it done.
I think that was Brian Billick. He was the one that said they want to build a basketball team with a center and a power forward and a shooting guard and a wing and a point guard. So 5 different. So in a way, the Ravens have, Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely are bigger bodied guys, but they're also both best out of the slot. So I think you need somebody that can threaten that deep third outside the numbers. Is really doesn't have to necessarily be size. I think speed is more important than size, but if you can get them both, then why not?
All right, fair enough. So some money saved there, sort of, and kicked down the road in terms of the OBJ. And it is a case where the Ravens have found an additional, very positive, creative way to create cap space by deferring dollars. Now, remember, saving dollars and deferring dollars are two different things. The Bowser $5.5 million is saving dollars. Those are dollars that'll never be paid by the Baltimore Ravens. The OBJ thing is strictly moving dollars around from one year to the next. So all cap savings are not created early. Right.
They already paid it. It's just when does it count? The other player in that same vein was Ronnie Stanley, who apparently reportedly agreed to a restructured rework deal that is going to lower his base salary for 2024, which he can earn back most of it or maybe even more through incentives, but it should lower his 24 number. And then if he hits those incentives, it'll hit the 25 cap. I think this is a happy compromise for both sides that really benefits both parties.
It's good. As I understand it, and I have not seen the contract details, I've just heard it talked about a little bit. Appears Stanley's effectively guaranteeing his playing time in 24. That's been one of the big questions, is his ability to stay on the field. If he stays on the field, he should earn basically what he did. But because he hasn't been on the field, that may be NLTBE money, which is another way the Ravens can defer some dollars into 25. I look at this contract as giving Ronnie another chance to see if he could be a longer term Raven. And he would have had that anyway if they kept him on with the full cost as it was. And I expected that to be the case. This probably increases that chance some. And I don't know what they did in terms of void years on this deal to make this work out. But if they added void years, or if they restructured the 25 money in some way, then it may even increase his chance to stay with the Ravens long term and be re-signed. Right. So we'll see how that goes. But there's a big savings in 25 as it was, and I haven't seen the new details, as it was to cutting Ronnie Stanley of about $20 million.
Yes. So we haven't seen the contracts for anybody, I don't think. We saw Matabike. That's the only one. Mm-hmm. So we don't know exactly where they stand, but it does seem like there's a lot of pushing money forward. So, you know, expect some cap austerity over the next 3 years. Now it's going to take a little time to dig out of the hole.
Yeah. Nobody can really accept cap austerity. And as a season ticket holder, I don't want to be forced into cap austerity. I don't want to be forced into tank years. So this sucks. All right. We got a long list of free agent losses to go over here. And I think what we're going to do is, here, since we're running way over, we're going to run those in a second show here. So, Vas, appreciate you doing the show with me always. It's one of my favorite things to do is talk football with you. But tell folks where they can find your work online.
Likewise, Ken. Always enjoyed. On Twitter, X, at Vasilis Beatdown, Vasilis Beatdown, co-managing editor and author for Baltimore Beatdown Blog.
All right. Other folks out there doing a historical series this offseason, please hit me up if you'd like to talk about one Ravens player. Voss is going to talk about Matt Judon. I especially want people to talk about players who have not been around for a while, players who played before 2010. I'm looking for a lot of pre-2000 people. There are precious few people who really still remember the pre-2000 Ravens, and I don't want them to be lost to history. They're a fun group of players to talk about, and Derek Alexander and Michael Jackson, some of the offensive linemen, Blackshear and Orlando Brown and players like that. If you want to talk about one of them, fantastic. If you have a player from any era, though, just DM me and I will get back to you very quickly, and we'll arrange a time to record. These will be playing all off season, so should be a lot of fun to do these. I know the ones I've done have already been quite a bit of fun. For Vas Larikos, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye, and we'll talk to you next time on Friday Morning GM.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.